Welcome to the Funding Moments Podcast.
Welcome to the Finding Moments Podcast, episode number 20. I don't think if you asked any of us when we started, we thought we would get to 20, but we're at 20. So thank you for continuing to listen and download and subscribe and give us a good 5-star rating, which we really enjoy those. Keep that up. Tell your friends. Episode number 20, I'm here with Linnell and Tricia, and we're going to talk about parenting mistakes. And are they mistakes? I don't know. We've got some doozy stories. I think we asked our kids and what they tell us, mistakes that we've made, take it for what it's worth.
It's one of those things where you are constantly, at least I am, oh my gosh, was that the right thing to do? How is this going to impact everybody in the future? Have I done irreparable harm?
I think that is the way that it's sold too, is that whenever you read something about parenting, it's how you should be a better parent, or here is a way where to avoid the mistakes, or the headline is like, if you do this, you're a terrible parent, don't do any of these things. And of course, you've already done them all. So
yeah, exactly. We've got an article that sparked this conversation that we'll post for everybody that, yeah, there's 7 things that you're never supposed to say to your kids. And I've personally done all 7 of them. So multiple times.
Before we get into that, I just want to point everybody to a video that we will also post. And if you have not watched the post-game interview with Giannis from the Milwaukee Bucks, it is spot on. And he was asked if the season was a failure. And there's such a following. The NBA stars have such a platform. And I think every parent and kid should just watch this, because he basically just nailed a reporter and said, is it a failure? Is your job a failure? He ended it with saying, it's not a failure to be ousted from the playoffs. It's steps to success, and there's always steps to it. And it's just a message, and that goes right into parenting. There's no wrong answer, because there is no playbook. Every kid is different. I think we're dealing with 2 teens and one younger child that is way more mature for his age than we would like to admit. I think that we all have to give ourselves a pass and realize that some of these stories are funny, and in hindsight, they might have seemed like a really, really big deal, and your kids are going to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's what we talk about a lot. It's like focusing on what is going to be valuable to your child. And that's the time that you spend with them and the memories you create with them. And hopefully, you know, those are big enough that the times that you snapped at them because you were cranky get overlooked.
Yes.
I will do a disclaimer warning label, though. If you decide that you want to give your pre-teens, tweens, teenagers AirPods, you can never go back from it. They will just use it as a way to ignore you.
Yeah, I would have to agree, Chad. I think that's probably been a decent mistake. At least if there's a speaker, they can, they might still ignore you, but it's much more difficult to pretend that they can't hear you.
Yes, yeah. There's times where I'm yelling. I realize like she's in the next room, but has her earbuds in.
Yes. Yes. And
set on the noise canceling setting. Yeah.
I went to pick up our teen and 3 of his friends from a function, and they were all in the car, and I'm trying to make small talk, play music, have some fun with them. And I literally turn around and they're all on their phones and they all have a device in their ears, not paying attention at all. Cannot hear me in the car. All of them. Not just one, it's every child.
Yep. Yep. I can totally relate. I drove to a scout event last year, and there was, I think, 3 other scouts besides ours and another adult. And I drove to a place that was a good, healthy 2 hours away, and nobody said anything at all. And I felt like a chauffeur. It was weird.
That I had the exact same experience a couple of weeks ago when we were driving back from the trip to the concert with my daughter and her friend, and it's very quiet. And I'm like, what is going on back there? Either your beds are in. Then an hour later, they're both still have their earbuds in, but they're also asleep.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I would have to put towards the top of the list of things we should have held out on, the wireless headphones.
But I think you're right. Your kids see it as a mistake. And then as a parent, as you go forward, you reframe your thinking. And I think that it's hard because kids can wear you down really easily sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like that's what they do, right? They
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Get on a campaign. And I think that sometimes, especially what I think parents are very affected by, but everybody else has this or everybody else is doing this. Mm-hmm. So mean that I can't. And then it's hard. Like it's hard to have that perspective. And I feel like sometimes we find out that just from experience, like maybe I should have waited on that, or maybe that wasn't a good idea in retrospect, but I didn't want to make a parenting mistake. So I did this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of our perceived mistakes are centered around tech and granting too much, granting it access too early, or things like that. I think that's a still relatively untested set of standards that, you know, everyone is still trying to figure out at what age XYZ is appropriate and or a good idea or necessary, or, you know, whatever adjective you want to use there. Nobody really has the right answer yet. And that's something that I feel sure is still going to carry on evolving. I know that the experts are telling everybody not to have any screen access at all until the kiddos are at least 2 or 3 years old, which is really difficult to achieve. And it's only gotten worse since our kids were born. Current parents of little littles, yeah, it's even more widespread than it was.
I think you have to find humor in it, though. You have to keep redirecting it back because it's just funny. Like, you can
totally,
you could diffuse a lot of situations with a little bit of a sense of humor. Some of my biggest mistakes, though, is I might push that humor too far, so I have to pull it back. But even the other night, I got so confused at what the kids were telling us at dinner. And they're like, oh, this is so cap and that's sus. And they're like throwing around all these words. I'm like, what are you talking about? And so one of my friends from work is like, oh, you need the Gen Z dictionary translator. So I downloaded it and we just started using the words all dinner long. And they just they ran away. It was just so funny.
They did. A teenager especially just escaped. Like, I can't possibly deal with you talking like my friends. I'm out of here.
That is funny.
And if you really want to have some fun with them, then you just really go into kind of like some 90s phrases and you're just like quoting rap songs and you're like, that's just so Run DMC. And you just really have a little bit of fun. And they're like, what are you talking about? Diving in on some of these things that you're just not ever supposed to do that we've all done. Telling your kid to calm down.
Everybody's done it. But yeah, I don't know why we do that to kids, because we sure don't like it as adults.
No one does. No. Or right along that same line is stop crying, stop having a fit, stop, you know.
Knock it off. That's what we used to do.
Yeah, totally.
Knock it off.
Yeah, I think I like these days to use, you need to take it from a level 10 to a level 5. And then I get told this is a level 5 and I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble.
Or that take it down a notch. That's another one too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
They just feel like you're overwhelmed too, usually in those situations. So I think that's, you
absolutely
just say what's coming out. And you know, no, is it telling a little kid to calm down the best strategy? Probably not, because they don't have very good calming strategies to pull from anyway. So, but I think it is just something like in the moment, like it's just a kind of a brain stopper for you because you're in the middle of the chaos with them. And something about your own child being upset, like other children that do not belong to me, a whole different level of patience, but your own child when they're upset, it just sets something off biologically, I think, in you to respond.
Yes, absolutely. I felt that specifically as a new mom. Oh, wow. It was almost a physical, visceral reaction, especially when they were brand new and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Yes, totally. I mean, agree.
That's what allows you, that keeps you from sleeping, because it's like half your brain is waiting for any sound from this baby.
Yes. And we had reflux and night terrors and all kinds of fun extra stuff that just made that even more of a thing. Nobody slept at our house for a long time.
Yeah. So I think the calm down is like us responding to the situation too. You know, it's not just exactly that. I don't know that parents are always completely directing that at their kid, but it's almost like, I just need everything to stop for a moment. Calm down.
Yes. Yes. But you know, the article mentioned, I forget exactly what the phraseology was, but it was equally unhelpful. Something along the lines of, oh, I see you're really angry right now. I don't know that, especially when they're little, I don't know that I would have the calm on my own to be able to use that phrase. And I also don't know how a kid would respond to that, especially a really young child.
They might yell back, I am angry.
Right. Absolutely.
This is my mad face.
Well, I want to give credit to the article. It's it was published at CNBC Make It. It's Raising Successful Kids. Parents who raise mentally strong kids never use these seven phrases when their children are young, says it was published on April 16th, 2023. So relatively recent. Basically interviewing Amy Morin, a psychotherapist, with just some great advice in there. So I want to give credit there. Yeah, telling a child how to feel, we don't like to be told how to feel as well. So it just redirects it in this case to say, it looks like you feel like this. Like, try to get them to recognize it in and of themselves and then get them to help problem solve the solution with you. So take them through the steps. Calm down, that's as good as just saying, sit down and shut up. And it just, it never works. It just ends up feeding it more.
And I do think that kids need to learn how to label emotions and identify emotions. So totally. I think that is really important. But I also think like what the key piece there is, I have a solution. There's always a solution. Because then you have to be able to calm down to go through that solution and figure it out.
Yes.
So, hey, there's always a solution. I can tell you're upset. Let's problem solve this or let's fix this, you know, whatever the
language. I like that a lot. I think, okay, I got to file that one away and try it on my own, see if that works.
And some of my worst mistakes as a dad is when I lose my own emotions and I'm not calm. So usually I if I'm telling them to calm down, I probably need to look in a mirror because I'm probably not calm myself. And it's probably feeding into that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why, like I said, a lot of parents say it because it's almost like, I just need everything to stop for a moment because we're all not in a good situation, you know?
Totally.
This next one leads right into it. Don't worry about it. Same thing, just different side of the coin. Trish, you and I have experienced this over the last 15 months post-fire. And when we tell our kids to not worry about it, they just internalize it and they're worrying more. And then we have to unpack that. And it's just better to try to meet them where they're at and bring them along with the process. If we're worried, they're going to worry. Or if they've got a problem going on at school, they're going to worry. It's more productive to try to figure out why they're worried, what's the source, and then talk about it.
That's really hard to do, especially if you're going through a big situation like we've been going through, or a divorce, or a death in the family, or a death of a pet, or, you know, anything that is a big change for your family. Man, that's hard. And there's been so many things that Chad and I have had to take on that are extra and involve tense phone calls or conversations while the kids are around because you can't avoid it all the time. We do our best, but even that's not necessarily the right tactic to use either because they still feel it whether or not they're included in it. That's been tough. So I feel you, everybody.
And I think the other version is it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think that with those two, that if you have a child that's already kind of maybe leans in more to that anxiety side, this actually can make a child have more anxiety. But I also think it's kind of, this is the same one where instead of like just saying, don't worry about her, it'll be okay. Giving them something they can control. Cause that's really what we all do in those situations when we're worrying about things that you don't know what's going to happen yet. You don't know how it's going to fall out. That's the worry, the unknown. And I think that that's where like, well, if this does happen, this is what we'll do. Or, hey, if this does happen, let's talk about what you can do. And I think then you're armed with some, you know, some way to deal with it rather than just don't think about it.
Right.
But it's hard in the moment. Like, I mean, this is the thing, is that all parents say this, because sometimes these events, like you said, they impact the whole family. So you haven't even got to the process where you're like, what are we? I mean, the adults, it's like, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to fix this?
Yes.
I think for us, the strategy has really been, and we've had to learn it, and we're definitely not perfect and made lots of mistakes along the way here. But what we've learned through it is we can't shield the kids from adversity, and we can't tell them it's always going to be okay at the end. You want to wrap them in a hug, like, do that. But that doesn't mean it's going to be okay in the end. It just means you're going to get through it and do it together. And I think that that's really the lesson at the end of the day. Your kids' worries are your worries. And it could be something as small, and we've experienced this, bullying in school or adversity with a teacher or struggling with an assignment. Or it could be something major that affects the whole family, like Trish said. The common denominator that you can do is you can do it together and show and teach them the steps on how you get through the other side.
I think that's a really good point, because like you said, like, you can't, it's not possible to make all those phone calls and the kids not hear any of them. I mean, you guys, the amount of work and conversations you guys have had to go through to get to where you are. But part of that is teaching them, showing them, you can handle things. This is how you handle things. Yes, it's a problem, but hey, this is how we fix it. And not going and fixing everything behind the scenes, because then they don't see that. They don't learn those skills. You're not modeling, like, hey, no, like, this is acknowledging this is hard for all of us, you know?
Yeah.
But we're going to fix it. This is what we're going to do to fix it. Here's step one. I think that's really helpful for kids to see that. And I think too, that some of this has to do with, you know, we have this in, you want to protect your kids. So it's always like, I think that drive to protect them sometimes means that, like, we forget, like, it's okay to include them in a little bit. Obviously you don't want to put unnecessary adult burdens on them, but
right,
when it's a thing like as big as what you guys have went through with the fire, like, that's not something you can hide from them. Like, there has to be some way to process this.
At least in our situation, the line between what is appropriate to share and, you know, fully communicate, the financial piece of this thing has just been huge. And that's not anything that our kids can impact or change or worry about at all. As adults, they'll remember that we did get through it, and then they'll be able to ask more age-appropriate questions at that time if they ever find themselves in complicated situations of their own. But at this stage, they don't need to worry about the shenanigans our mortgage company has pulled or anything else along those lines, that there isn't anything that they can do. And we did get it resolved. It wasn't a fun process, but it happened.
Your children are going to be in this home that was rebuilt, that they have seen their parents, like, whether they know all the details or not, they're going to see that you guys went through all this. They're going to see that you guys were stressed. Like, you're not going to get through this without being stressed, but they're going to see how you handled it. And you guys are going to make all of these memories, and there's going to be this kind of new experience and new memories that you will make in this home. So I think your kids are going to leave with, like, oh my gosh, you can get through something like this.
Yeah. We hope. We hope.
The next one was, don't ever let me catch you doing that again. And I love this, because it's just like, I've learned from this one, because I do this all the time. If you do this, this is going to be the consequence. But if you only teach them the consequence, then all of a sudden they're going to find out how to avoid the consequence and go the other way. Even if it's harder to get to that root, they're going to hide it from you and you're not going to see it. And then they're still going to have the consequence. So that's a tough one to try to navigate, but it's like, this is one of the most common parenting mistakes to make, is just tell them the punishment before you actually get to the root cause of why they're doing it.
I think too, this is one of these things. So I feel like when parents don't talk about their mistakes, because I feel like we're in a culture where you feel very judged by other parents, and there's always some new rule book that's been published that clearly you weren't doing. And I don't know if it's for some of these that anybody could do all of those things and keep it going. But I think that it's one of those things where we all have variations of these things. And when I read this, what I remember, here's one of my parenting mistakes that I shouldn't have said, but said several times. Walking in, I remember one time she was who knows why, pouring a glass of water down the vent on the second floor.
Oh,
and I walked in and said, have you lost your mind? And that was my completely unhelpful phrase, but it was something completely off the wall. I'd be like, have you lost your mind? So yeah, that was my bad parenting phrase.
Oh, I bet that was a mess.
Who knows why they do some of this stuff they do.
Right.
But, you know, that's probably one where it's like, she probably snuck back and did it again some other time, Chad. So,
I remember when our oldest was little and we're like, you got to clean your room. You got to clean your room. And we go to move and we find under his bed the pile of all the trash. It's just sitting right there. And we're like, okay, so you didn't really clean your room. You didn't, you just hid it, made it go somewhere else. You laugh about it now, but it's kind of one of those no-brainer things. I think in life in general, whether it's scouts or work or just in any situation, it doesn't matter if you're 30 years old or if you're 9, it's okay to make mistakes. Just don't make them again. If you can explain the steps, well, if you do this, this is going to happen. I'm trying to teach the kids how to manage money. And one of them went and spent more than he earned for the week on video games. It's like, well, you're going to run out of money. You're going to be in debt. And now you have to borrow it from your younger brother who's going to charge you interest. Great.
That's pretty great. Is he's really going to charge him interest? I'm sure he is, right?
Oh, the younger one threw it back at me yesterday because he really wanted us to do something yesterday. And I kind of was like, oh, this weekend or oh, not right away. And I was just trying to put it off and buy time. And I think that's just a defense mechanism because we're tired. And he's like, I don't take no for an answer. I learned that from you. Okay.
100% right.
Totally got me there.
But I think to this phrase, I don't like to catch him doing that again, or the have you lost your mind, which is not the best phrase to use, but I did it. That's an admitted parenting mistake. I think those again are like when we are in overload too. It's like the parent is in overload. You're either panicked because you've caught them doing something very dangerous, right? You know, a fork in a socket or something like that.
Right.
Or it's something like one of those moments and you're like, this isn't good, you know, and you just, you react and these things come out of your mouth. And I think that parents need to be aware, like, you're not going to be a perfect parent. You're going to say things that you probably shouldn't have said, but you also can't just decide like, you're this bad parent. You have to, like, again, it's a mistake and you move forward. And I think it would be better if parents could talk to each other about mistakes, because I think people would feel a lot less alone. Like, you'd realize like, no, other parents are having just as much difficulty navigating parenting, and they're making mistakes too. We're just not going to be perfect. That's not possible.
So this is a big one. And this goes to everybody gets a trophy, which everybody's on a different level there on what they think about that. But telling your kid you're the best all the time. Or I'll even take it one step further. You're in a group of your friends and you're bragging about how well your kids are and how far ahead they are and how there's a line. And if you do that, you're just creating an anxiety riddled child because they don't want to disappoint you. You're setting up an expectation that is not achievable. And so where's the balance there? Like, we're going to constantly make mistakes on this front, but we love our children. We all think they're the best and they all have special skills and super talents. But if you constantly tell them they're great, they're just going to end up trying to meet that expectation their whole life.
Your kid has to be this, you know, you have to have the, my kid's an honor student bumper sticker. Do you have this? And parents get as much caught up into that as the kids do sometimes. So I think then it's,
oh yeah,
then it's really hard. Like, so you get very focused on, oh, you know, you didn't make this. And then what do you say? Like, cause it's always like, you're the best, you're going to do this. You're going to make this, or you're going to get this done, or you're going to have an A here, or you're going to be picked for that. And then it does cause all this stress and anxiety versus being able to, I heard someone once talk about when they got in the car with their kid and picked them up from school, they always said, tell me, you know, something you struggled with today. And they would talk to them, like, really focus on like problem solving and how their child handled that and really praising that. And I always thought like, that's good, because that parent's making a point to also acknowledge what they're facing in their day rather than just like, oh, did you have a good day today? Perfunctory. Yeah, it was okay. Or I love the, I don't know.
When they don't talk to you.
I don't know. But I think that was a way to open up a constructive conversation and really build a kid up, because they face a lot of things at school. I mean, I know they don't have adult lives, but kid lives can be pretty brutal.
Yes.
Marin advises in the article that you need to praise the process and the effort, not the outcome. You want to reward and give that high, that endorphin, that praise to the hard work put in, because hard work will inevitably lead to success, but it's not perfect. And it's just an interesting way. I think as a parent, it gives you the thing that you want to impart onto your kids without giving them the anxiety that goes with it. Because everybody can work hard if they put the effort in, but not everybody's going to have the top art piece prize. They're not going to get the perfect score. And it's good advice.
Again, how are you going to deal with things that you have to get through in life? Not just, are you going to win everything or you only get attention when you succeed?
The next one is, that's perfect. When you tell them that's perfect, it's like, now you're creating a perfectionist. And if you only praise your child when they do something perfectly, that's what they're going to strive for every time.
I think that one's an interesting, some of these are interesting because they sound great. Like who would think, like, I wouldn't think, oh, you're the best. That's perfect. I love that. You don't think that that's a parenting mistake. That sounds good, right?
Right.
And I think that that's where, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I know I've said this phrase before, like social media artwork or something like that. Like, oh my gosh, that's perfect. But then really thinking about, like, what does that mean? What that word, I guess, is kind of a loaded word.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know that I've ever, well, I guarantee I have ever. On a regular basis, I don't think I use the word perfect. I do it on the phone though, when I'm talking to somebody to make an appointment with or something along those lines, I'll use it then. I think I mostly do amazing or great or any of those other superlatives that are similar.
I know I've said it because I can think like, at Christmas, we were wrapping stuff and she's so artistic and like really cool ideas for wrapping gifts. And she would, you know, add something on like, that one is perfect. I mean, I know I've said it just casually, not thinking anything of it.
Sure.
Trish and I had like the perfect morning at California Adventures. And so I said it a couple of times, this is like the perfect day. And then all of a sudden we get some backlash from the younger and it turned into not a perfect day. We got the opposite result from it. So like, I'm kind of careful how I use the word now.
You got punished for using it.
I got punished for using the word. I'm like, it's too good to be true. We got perfect half a day. This one really, you're making me mad. And Marin says, the idea that your feelings can be affected by someone else's behavior is counterproductive. We don't want children growing up blaming, and I'm quoting, other people for making them mad, for ruining their day, for causing them to feel horrible all of the time. This one's loaded. This is everything pandemic on right now. Like this, I see it every day, everywhere.
That's what I was going to say. This isn't just a parenting thing. This is an overall relationship with other human beings thing.
Yes.
And I think that like, that's the thing that you feel the way you feel and people can have the same experience and feel different ways about it. Nobody makes you feel a way. That's how you interpret and you experience it. It's really not healthy for you. If you hear that coming out of your mouth, you're not in a good frame set, you know? And then yes, maybe you're passing on an unhealthy mindset to your kid too, but it usually means like, oh, I'm not in a good spot if I'm hearing this coming out of my mouth, because ultimately they're my feelings. Like nobody can tell me how to feel and nobody can make me feel a certain way. You have a right to your feelings. And I also think that like going back to what we talked about before about helping kids label and recognize their feelings. Once you do that, you learn how to respond to your feelings and you learn how to find healthy ways to process feelings. You know, you can't stay in sadness. You can't stay in anger. You have to do something to process those feelings and know what tools you can use to get through those feelings so that you can get back to a place where you feel good. And I think that when you do things like that, not only do you blame someone else, but then you're not taking care of yourself because you're not processing your own feelings and thinking about what do I need to do to process how I feel.
You're absolutely right. And it's in every walk that we experience on a daily basis. I think giving our children the tools to say it's okay to walk away for a few minutes, or, hey, you know what, if you need to go swing, if you need to go just fidget with toys for a bit, or if you need to go for a walk, or you need to go, our favorite, and these have been used quite a bit over the last year that we've seen, go find a dog with a job and just pet a dog. Dogs are really great with this. I saw an article where the firefighters after the fire are still experiencing post-traumatic stress, and they've put into service two new dogs to go, and they just wrap themselves around the firefighters. They can identify if you're feeling stress. So you can't tell somebody that you're making me mad. They should be able to see it if you're mad anyway. I think maybe reversing it and teaching our children how to recognize feelings and how to deal with them. I mean, you help teach our kids that early on, Linnell, like recognizing facial expressions and what's that emotion that goes to it. That might be a better way to go.
Yeah, but I think that's really hard. I think it's hard for adults too. You know, we've all had that a weird situation where like you can't get a read on a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we all have those. And I think too, like, you know, the example of the firefighters, like that was an event. It's something that has happened that you have a feeling and reaction to. And it can be more than one feeling. It can be different feelings. And I think that that's kind of like focusing, maybe someone put that action into, put that event into action, you know, but at the same time, the feelings are yours to own, you know. What they could have done is right or wrong, right? Like the actions can be right or wrong, but I think that it gets really complicated because feelings are something that if you don't know how to identify and process, you do internalize. And we all know how that ends up when you don't process things.
Not good. That's for sure.
Wrap it up. Some big parenting mistakes, because we've been trying to figure out some doozies just so that we're not all alone in this. Probably one of the earliest ones I did was I sat my very small kid on a chair, let him fall off. He couldn't even really fully sit up on his own. Stupid dad mistake, first time. He never lets me forget it. He says all the problems in the world are because I dropped him when he was little.
Is it funny that that's the stuff too? Like he probably doesn't actually remember that, but you do. And because of your parenting guilt, you've probably vocalized it. Because I had one time where I remember I lost my temper and I yelled at my daughter. And I still feel so bad about that because she started crying. And the event was not even her issue. It was me responding to too many things happening at once. And I feel so bad about it, but she doesn't remember it. But I feel like today, to this day, I have this parent guilt over it.
I think, and thank heavens nothing happened, but there was a time when our oldest was really small. I don't even remember exactly how old. I left a knife too close to the edge of the counter and he got curious and grabbed it. And it was not a small knife. It was one of those big chef's knives. And I turned around and he had it and I freaked out because he was so young. He didn't understand what he had.
Right.
Oh, tears, big, huge to do about it. No, and nobody even got hurt, which, as I said, thank heavens. Yeah.
All parents have those situations and we feel this need to hide them and somehow push ourselves to be to be the perfect parent. I think that's a perfect word again.
No such thing. No, doesn't exist.
You're not going to get through parenting and not make mistakes. You're going to have to, I mean, obviously you go in wanting to do the best job you can, but we need to cut each other some slack. And, you know, and I think it's good to be able to like sit down and say like, I know I made this mistake. Here's what I did. And someone say, you know what? It is a mistake, but it's going to be okay. Like we all make them, rather than people feeling like I'm going to be judged and having no one to process these things with. You just sit, you just take that guilt. You just pile it onto the parenting guilt you already have.
But yeah. Are they mistakes or are they steps to success? And I think when Trish and I were sitting there trying to figure out when you gave us this topic and we're like, okay, what are our mistakes? We were like going through the, they seemed worse in the moment. In hindsight, it's like, these are just building blocks. This is who our kids are now. And they build them to the place where they are. And I think that that's really the message, is find humor about it. There's no right or wrong answer. There's no playbook. We try to, we try to not be our parents naturally, but at the same time, we realize that we integrate a lot of what our parents imparted on us. It just happens. And what we love about our community is we watch what all the other parents are doing. We're like, that's really cool what they're doing with their kids. And you try to take the best parts of it. The things that you think are a problem, you're like, that wasn't really a problem. It's just all kids are different and everybody's going to grow up how they do. Like, and that's the message, is it's not a mistake.
Totally.
I think you get so sucked into it too, and are so busy trying to be the best parent or follow this new way of doing something that you're more focused on that than just enjoying those moments and being at ease with your own child. And then you miss those things. And those are really the things that are going to be the long lasting memories, or those moments that you create together. They're not going to remember the time that maybe you yelled at them, or, you know, you said the wrong thing because you were in a bad place too. You know, I think that just making sure that you don't miss those. And I'm telling you guys how my daughter said to me, it was yesterday, said, you know, at some point there was a moment you picked me up and put me down and you never picked me up again. And I just felt so bad. It's like, I didn't remember that last moment. I don't remember when that was, but I wish I did. But you know, our kids grow up so fast, and if you're going to worry, spend so much time worrying about, is this the right parenting thing? Just being with them is being a good parent, and and spending that time with them.
Definitely. I saw on the news a couple of weeks ago, something that has really stuck in my mind for all you parents of littles. Everybody at some point in the world has, quote unquote, lost their kid. They turn around and they've escaped from them and are in a different part of the store, house, yard, park, wherever you might be. And you have that moment of panic. The woman who was being interviewed did something that didn't even occur to me. It was so smart. And her daughter was safe and everything was fine. They had just escaped to another part. I think they were at a museum. And instead of calling out her child's name, she called out her description. Little girl wearing such and such. And I was like, wow, that is a fantastic tip. Everybody needs to hear that. And every other parent who was in that area immediately knew the problem and started looking, and everything was fine. And the little girl was just in the next room looking at a different exhibit or something along those lines. But what a great tool, and not a mistake. It's happened to all of us.
It's guaranteed. Happened to me. I remember vividly inside a piece of playground equipment hiding.
Oh, geez. That's even worse.
So it didn't matter if I called her name, right? Because she was hiding.
Oh, Lord. Yes. But just, I promise, if it's happened to you, it's happened to 20 others, just in slightly different circumstances.
Bit of advice, just general parent advice. Be with other parents. Go have that drink or that cup of coffee, or have them over, let the kids play and share stories. You'll feel automatically better about yourself, because guarantee it's across the board. So don't be isolated. Don't miss the moment. Like Linnell said, enjoy your kids now. That is the one best thing about it. Good, bad. It's the journey, and you'll always have those memories down the road. So don't think of it as mistakes. Think of it as steps to success.
And find those parents that will support you and you can have those honest conversations with.
Episode 20, like us, follow us, subscribe, be a part of our family, and we'll keep coming back. So see you next time.